There once was a seed who lived in a drawer in a room of a mansion by a beautiful shore. So begins a lovely retelling of Jesus' parable of the seed. This is in a book for children ages 3 and up. And the author of that book is Anthony DeStefano, a Catholic author, and he joins us right now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Anthony, it's good to have you on the program.
Oh, it's great to be here, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Sure, and let me just say something about your book, because these are really highly, these recommendations are mean a lot to us here. Dr. Ben Carson said, wait, this is very confusing. Who said which one? I think this is Mike Huckabee said, an inspiring story about the transformative power of God's grace. Ben Carson, I believe, said, this book shows that God has the power to turn even the worst suffering into something beautiful. And Alveda King, my good friend who I've had on this program many times, says, a wonderful book with an important gospel message. I just wanted to mention those at the very outset. So tell us about your book, The Seed Who Was Afraid to Be Planted.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to write a book on fear. You know, I think fear is the biggest problem that we face today, that not only children but adults face. You know, we're afraid of so many things. You know, just speaking as an adult, you're afraid of money problems and problems with your children and your family and your career. Most of all, I think people are just afraid that they don't have what it takes to overcome all the problems that they face. So for children, of course, the problems are even greater, because the world is a scary place and they're small, and so many of the experiences that we take for granted are new and can even be traumatic for them. So I've always wanted to write a book about fear, and reading Jesus's parables. You know, he spoke several parables about seeds and grains of wheat that have to fall to the earth and die, before they're able to bear fruit. I just thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to take one of those parables and write it from the perspective of the seed? Because you know, presumably if a seed were able to talk and he had it fall to the ground and die, that little seed would be afraid of what might happen to him. You know, he wouldn't have the foresight to know that he was destined to become, you know, a tremendous tree or something wonderful in God's kingdom. So I thought that would be a great vehicle to teach children about trusting in God and to overcome their fears and perhaps to deal with grief as well. And it would also help adults who would be reading the story to their children.
Now, I don't have a copy of it. I've never seen it before. I assume it's just filled with illustrations and so forth, beautifully done.
Yes. I used, for all my children's books, which have been, and they've all been endorsed by the National Day of Prayer, by the way, I try to use great illustrators. Many times, I think, Christian products, books, etc., they don't use the highest level of people, and I don't know why that's the case. So I've gone out of my way to use New York Times best-selling illustrators, and the person who did the illustrations for this book actually worked on all the Shrek movies. His name is Irwin Madrid. So he's worked on these major motion pictures before. And I want to make sure that the illustrations are captivating and really convey this this gospel message effectively.
All right, your book is described this way. The seed who was afraid to be planted reminds us all that no matter how small or scared we may be, God has great plans for us, plans even more wonderful than we can imagine.
Yes, well, I mean, you and I, we don't know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, much less 5 years from now or 10 years from now. I mean, but God, you know, he's already in the future. He's there already. He knows what's going to happen. And I think, you know, one of the bedrock Christian principles is obviously to trust in God, because he knows the future and because he loves us so much. And if we put our trust in him and surrender to him, then he's going to somehow see us through all the suffering we go through. He's not going to necessarily take that suffering away, but he's going to see us through and somehow, some way, pull some sort of greater good or blessing out of the frightening things we have to go through. And I think that if we instill that message in children early, then that gives them almost like a protective armor that's going to help them throughout their entire lives, because they're going to, no matter what, they're going to encounter lots of suffering and lots of grieving and lots of scary situations.
So it's kind of, in one sense, you know, think of the old, I think I can, or whatever, the little train, the engine that could, but it adds God to the picture, which is, you know, obviously a key component that's often missing in even children's books.
Yes, yes, you know, it's a good point that you're making here, because the whole self-help personal development industry, you know, is really founded on this principle of the little train that could, you know, I think I can, and therefore, you know, they're able to do incredible things. And that the self-help movement has a lot of good principles, and some of the proponents of it are very good, and some of them even Christian, but they often leave out the most important component, and that's God's help. You know, without God, I can do nothing. With God, nothing is impossible. And that those principles taken together, those parallel principles, really do give you the power to do anything. And to teach children early on to plug into the power source of the whole universe, that's a big lesson. That's a big lesson. In other words, you don't want to teach children or adults that we have the power on our own to accomplish things, because we could practice all the, you know, success principles in the world, and tomorrow, you know, we may go to the doctor and get some bad news, and our whole world might come down crumbling around us. So we've got to get rid of this idea that, you know, we're the ones that can do everything. Got to be trusting in God, and it's best to give children that principle as soon as they can possibly understand it.
Very good point. Speaking of parables of Jesus, yeah, just the most recent sermon I heard was on one of the parables of Jesus. It was the one in Luke. You don't hear it preached often, but Luke chapter 12, where there's this rich man, not the rich young ruler, but this rich man who, the gist of the story is that he just prospers, and he tears down the barn so he can build a new barn, and so he can add more and more and more stuff. Everything is all about stuff. And then he dies, and God says, "You fool, you know, your soul is required of you, and, you know, what do you have to show for it?" And, you know, as Jesus said in a different context, what does it profit you if you gain the whole world and you lose your soul? And anyway, going back to the Luke 12, he said, this is what happens to those who are rich for themselves but not rich toward God.
That's right. That's right. And that line from Scripture has always been very frightening to me. You know, you fool, your soul is required of you this very evening. I mean, that could be all of us, any of us. The same God that promised, that gave you the morning, does not promise you the evening. You know, so that's an important lesson that we need to all face. There's no protective mechanism we could build up against when it's our time to meet God. So we always have to be prepared and ready. Of course, this children's book doesn't necessarily speak to that point directly, sure, but it's implied.
Okay, so tell me this. The parables of Jesus, there are different ones that have seeds in them. Is this kind of an amalgamation then of different seed parables, or was there one in particular you were kind of retelling essentially?
Well, there's two or three. One of them, you know, from John 12 is, you know, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." But then also in Matthew 13, you have, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed,
yes,
you know, which a man planted in his field. And though it's the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, you know, it's the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree. And then the birds come and perch in its branches. There's a couple more too, but I wanted the seed in this book, who starts as a very little seed, to grow into a tremendous tree. And when he grows into a tremendous tree, all the birds fly and build nests in his branches, and all the animals around come and are nurtured by him. And there's flowers and nuts and that spring from him. I wanted to make the point that when we surrender to God's will, and we trust in him, even though we have to face these frightening situations, the person that we become as a result of that is someone that is going to be nurturing and a source of life and nourishment to everyone around us. So that's the power of actualizing our potential when we become when we allow God to prune us and become more fruitful.
Excellent. So it really would be the mustard seed parable of Matthew 13. If you had to pick one, it seems to me.
And it's also Jesus Christ himself. He is, of course, the greatest, most fundamental example of a seed that falls to the ground and dies. And then when he rises from the dead, he becomes the most fruitful of all. So Jesus himself, when he told that parable of the seed, was also referring to himself. So there's a lot of levels here. As you know, when you read Scripture, you know there's so many different meanings, deep, profound truths that are contained. And this little children's book only hints at a few of those.
Was there a particular incident or something that happened in your life that made you think about, you know, producing this book?
You know, it was just I was reading the Bible one day, and I read that John 12:24 about the grain of wheat that falls to the ground and dies. And I had been thinking for a long time about, you know, how do I write a book about fear for children? And it just struck me like a thunderbolt, you know, just like a moment of one of those moments that writers dream about. And you're a writer, so you know about this. You know, when something just hits you, a moment of inspiration, I thought, wow, what a great way to tell a children's book, from the perspective of that seed. So it wasn't anything other than that. I mean, I've like all human beings, I've experienced a lot of fear in my life, and I've had to grieve over many people who have died that I loved. And also there's a message about grieving in this book, too, because the seed, you know, for all intents and purposes, dies. You know, he's no longer a seed. What he becomes is much greater and grander. This tree overlooking a beautiful sunlit shore. And that there's a message in that for children and adults who are grieving, because obviously, you know, death is not the end of the story. The end of the story is life, abundant life. So I've always been empathetic, and I've wanted to be able to try to help people who are experiencing those kinds of problems.
Are you a children's writer? I mean, I'm not familiar with you other than, you know, this information about this book.
No, I've written six best-selling books for adults. They're written, published by Random House and HarperCollins. My first book, Travel Guide to Heaven, was a big bestseller, and 10 Prayers God Always Says Yes To, and also endorsed by the National Day of Prayer. And my last book was Inside the Atheist Mind, and that was a takedown of the New Atheists. And I was, you know, I've written mainly adult books, but in the last few years, I've really felt a calling to write children's books even more, because, you know, as you know, being involved in this secular world we're in right now that oppresses so much our Christian values, you know, if you want to be in this culture war on the side of the gospel, one of the things you have to do is try to get to children and instill in them these values before they are corrupted by society.
Yeah, excellent point. In the parable, speaking of parables, the parable of the talents, the third guy buries his talent and then gets rebuked for that. And in effect, he was committing the sin of sloth. So in some ways, you're trying to address that issue as well, it sounds like, in this book. And we have about 45 seconds to sum up.
Well, you know, I didn't have that in mind when I wrote that book. The last thing I would want is anyone to compare that little seed, that innocent little seed, to that slothful servant that should have at least put the talent in a bank and gotten interest. But as I said before, there's so many different meanings that you can gain from if you have a knowledge of Scripture that you could read into this. That of course, that's part of it as well.
Sure. Okay. Again, the book we're talking about is a children's book. It's called The Seed Who Was Afraid to Be Planted, and that's by Anthony DeStefano. And I'll spell his last name because the website is anthonydestefano.com. DeStefano. Okay, thank you, Anthony. God bless you.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, bye-bye now.